This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 184, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 170 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Robin Lassiter about her book, Earth, A Love Story. Robin is an author, podcaster, coach, and lifelong experiencer of anomalous, paranormal, and mystical experiences. Hi, Robin. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Such a pleasure to be with you, Simon. Thanks for asking me.
So we're going to be talking about your experiences and your book. It's called Earth, A Love Story. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, you were having experiences with beings, with ETs. When did it first start?
I didn't make sense of it all until much later, but my earliest experiences were at a very young age, at the age of probably 4 or 5, with out-of-body experiences, which of course at that age I had no idea what was happening, and also really intense dreams that I called Armageddon dreams, and contact with entities. And at that age, again, I had no framework or context for any of it. I didn't know that it was not normal life. And as I got older, I understood that these things were probably best not talked about. And it took me a very long time to kind of piece together what was happening. But yeah, started very, very early on for me.
And was there somebody you called Ant-Man that would visit you?
Yes. So since I wrote the book, which was a little while ago, I haven't deeply revisited these stories. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do that. Yeah, Ant-Man. I had experiences at a very young age of finding myself downstairs, which would have been very hard for me to do at that young age. My bedroom was upstairs in a loft, and it would have been hard for me to come down the stairs without waking people up, and hard in general to do that in the middle of the night in the dark. But I would find myself downstairs, and in front of me was this being who in my child sense-making I called Ant-Man, because he seemed insectoid. It seemed like he had an exoskeleton. I remember flashes of these memories, you know, and some of them have a lot of clarity. And that's one that is very, very clear, this sense of an exoskeleton and a sense that he was there to check on me. And I didn't know exactly what that meant, and I didn't know really what to do with it. And then experiences of him later in life, and flashes of him traveling, I guess, astrally is how I made sense of it later. Again, at that age, I didn't make sense of it that way, with him. And not knowing what to do with any of that. Ant-Man was probably my first entity contact that I could put into some sort of personification.
And was there any communication there?
It felt telepathic, and probably not in words, just this general sense of I've come to check on you. And my response was sort of a shrug and like, okay, I don't really know what any of that means, but I'm here with you and I'm receiving what you're telling me. And at later in my life, I've had much more clear and intense communication that is in words and concepts and ideas. But at that time, that very earliest contact, it felt just that he was coming to check on me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the fear, because the mental picture I get, if you call him Ant-Man and you talk about an exoskeleton, straight away it sounds super scary. And I would imagine when I was 4, that would have freaked me out. But you weren't that scared?
I don't remember being scared in that moment with that visit. I remember being quite sort of calm and sleepy, I would say. I did have a lot of fear in other experiences that I was having then, which were out of body experiences and what I now would call astral travel, and also the dreams were quite disturbing and terrifying. But for some reason, no, that contact with him in that moment, I wasn't scared. I will say that when I started putting this together as an adult, I did have a lot of fear, or just sort of ontological shock, trying to make sense of what that was and what I saw and how that could be possible. But at that very young age, it didn't seem, I had nothing to compare consensus reality to. So I didn't know that that wasn't, I think, part of just normal reality.
You mentioned the dreams there. Were they just like normal dreams, or were they hyper vivid and almost like you were actually there?
They were hyper vivid, and they're dreams that I had, and I still continue to have them off and on, but they were more prevalent in my life earlier and for most of my life. And hyper vivid, very disturbing, very lucid. That's a tough word. I wasn't aware that I was dreaming, but they were very, very vivid and in full color. And they were scenes of destruction and of the planet being destroyed and of explosions and scenes of devastation and people suffering. And I had, again, no context at that age for that. And my family was not religious. I had no context for Armageddon either, you know, what that would mean in terms of a Christian sense, anything like that. But I called them Armageddon dreams. They were these end of the world dreams. And they always came with a sense of urgency that I was supposed to do something to prevent it, which is really tough for a 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 15, you know, 20 year old. Yeah. I always had this sense of like, you got to do something about this. What are you going to do? It was being shown the destruction of the planet and being given the sense of urgency to take some action. And that was very, very hard.
This is something that shows up, isn't it, amongst this whole experience of thing. Many talk about being shown these kind of images.
It is. And I didn't know that until I discovered the experiencer community several years ago. I had no idea that other people had experiences like this, and finding out that other experiencers are shown similar things was an enormous relief and also so strange and curious, you know, as to why this happens. But yeah, it is a thing that shows up, that people are shown images of the destruction of the planet and given sort of a directive or a mission to do something about it.
And in those dreams, did you see UFOs amongst it, or ETs or beings, or it was just human stuff?
For most of the time, it was just, I guess, human stuff. It was images of, nuclear bombs going off and the planet from a height, you know, seeing, you know, having a sense of being up above the planet and seeing this destruction taking place. And often a sense that someone was with me, like that there was a presence with me that was showing this to me, but I didn't ever think of them as ETs or beings or NHI. I just, for such a long time, I just had these experiences with no context. When I was in my, it's always tough for me to put the timeline together, but somewhere in my mid-20s, these dreams were very, very active. I was also having a lot of other experiences with out-of-body and sleep paralysis and very, you know, precognition. All of these things were kind of arising. And when the dreams would come during that time, there would be these orbs, these spheres of different colors that would be present in the dream. And they played a really big role in all of that time in my life, including eventually receiving teachings, I guess, from them. And then it started to feel like I was having a lot more conscious contact with entities.
And do you have memories of real physical interactions with any of these, or is it all dreamlike and out of body?
Yeah, that's such a great question. It's so mysterious how this all happens. I would say at that time when I was having the dreams with the orbs, it was a mix of things. So it was happening in the liminal space between waking and sleep, certainly. And it was happening as I was paralyzed. So that was very physical, my body being completely paralyzed, my mind very awake. And then an entity would come. And then there would be an out-of-body experience that, if I had to categorize it one way or another, probably felt more in the dream realm or the non-physical realm, although it wasn't a dream. You know, I'm very clear about that. It was something else. So there's a mix of it being in the physical and also in these other realms of consciousness. And then later I had experiences that felt like that realm of consciousness came much closer to the physical. And it felt like it was happening.
Did you ever have physical marks on your body, or ever wake up and your clothes are on inside out or anything like that?
I don't think that I've ever had physical marks. I have not had the experience of, you know, my clothes being turned inside out, so things like that. I've wondered about that. I've had one experience where it felt very much like my physical body was moved. And then I came to in a completely different position than when the experience started or when I left. And that felt very much like my physical body was moved and manipulated. And I think that that's the only time that I have conscious recall of that happening.
So with the sleep paralysis, there is that thing of when people are going through the abduction experience, they say they're paralyzed while the ETs are taking them and while they're on board a craft. But you're saying this was sleep paralysis. That wasn't the kind of alien paralysis.
Well, that's a great question and a great distinction. When I started having these experiences, this would have been when all of it really got very active in my mid-20s, when I started having those experiences then, I didn't know what else to call it. You know, I would go through a night of absolute terror and wake up and try to search online for what this could possibly be. And the closest explanation that I found was sleep paralysis. I had no idea that there were, you know, that there was another way to look at this. And so I called it sleep paralysis, and that gave me a little bit of comfort for a while. Like, okay, this is a thing that happens. This is a normal thing. It's a disorder. You know, it's a sleep disorder. And that didn't keep me comfortable very long, because the things that were happening to me were not discussed in terms of sleep paralysis. So I called it that at the time. I believe there's probably a both and there, you know, that there is some sort of overlap between the experience of sleep paralysis and then being in this liminal space between waking and sleep and having experiences that are very real, that are not the effects of a sleep disorder. As I came into the experiencer community and got the context, I began to have experiences that showed me very clearly what it felt like to be paralyzed by an entity. And that is exactly what was happening during those times. And so sleep paralysis, I think, exists. And this experience of being paralyzed by an entity is not sleep paralysis. And it took a long time to like work all of that out.
So I think with sleep paralysis, isn't there something like there's different things around the world, but one of them might be old hag syndrome, or you see a shadow figure in the room, but a doctor would say, well, that's part of the sleep paralysis, you're hallucinating.
Yeah, I would love to speak to a doctor who's had the experience, because it's, you know, right, it's, I had this great experience when I was looking into all of this and trying to make sense of it, where I saw that around the world in all these different cultures that go, you know, back a very long time in our human history, that there is a framework for this, that this is a thing that happens. There's the old hag syndrome. There's the, in some places they say it's a cat that sits on your chest and creates fear. And, you know, there's talk of the jinn doing this or being witchcraft. Like there's all these ways to explain what's happening. And in Western culture, it's explained as a medical condition, as a sleep disorder. And regardless of the framework of the sleep disorder that's put around it, it does not explain the fullness of that experience. I actually just think that that's a symptom of our materialist culture. It's like it can't be measured. It's a subjective experience. Therefore, it's placed into this category of sleep paralysis, and this is a hallucination, when the experience of it is something completely different and kind of deconditioning from the way that our Western culture diminishes these experiences and labels them has been a big part of my journey as well.
So could you tell us about, say, a single incident that happened with this paralysis and encountering an entity?
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to. It's been a while since I've revisited this story, but I'm happy to tell it. So this happened well into these experiences. So it had been probably months of having these experiences every night where, you know, an entity would come or I would go out of body or just have the terror of the paralysis and then go into unconsciousness. And it was really, really bothering me. It was really very, very difficult. I wasn't getting good sleep. I was terrified a lot of the time. And I was really struggling with it. And I had no answers. I could not find anybody talking about these things. I had no support. And one night I was really struggling with this. Every time I would, you know, get close to sleep, I would become paralyzed. And then I would fight with all of my strength to resist that paralysis and kind of come out of it. And it wasn't working. I was really fighting it. And it felt like the terror of, you know, the terror of not knowing what would happen to me once I was paralyzed and having no control, you know, just it's a visceral primal fear and the body takes over and resists with every bit of its strength. And this was happening probably for hours. It felt like it was for hours. I was resisting. I was fighting it. It was overtaking me. I would fight my way out of it. And I was exhausted by this. And at some point during this experience, I had this thought that was, I wonder what would happen if I just let whatever was going to happen to me. What if I surrendered to this instead of trying to fight it? And it was kind of a move of last resort. You know, I just really didn't know what else to do. Nothing else was working. And so that thought came in, what if I surrender to this? And it was even the thought of it was quite terrifying. But I clearly remember saying yes and just choosing and saying, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kind of get my courage up and I'm just going to surrender and let go and let whatever is going to happen, happen. And as soon as I did that, I was overcome with this incredibly intense vibration that felt like a combination of light and sound that was absolutely full. You know, my experience was that was my entire reality was this intense vibration made of light and sound. And I kind of dissolved into it. And I realized at some point that the sound that I was hearing, this vibration, was the sound of everything that was making a sound on earth at once. It was like, I'm hearing every sound at once. And I had the understanding that I could choose a sound, like I could tune into a particular sound. And when I did that, and none of this was really you know, this is all just happening. It wasn't, didn't feel much like conscious choice. This is all just unfolding. When I tuned into a particular sound, I instantly was in the experience of what was making that sound. And the sound that I tuned into was the sound of leaves rustling. And the instant I identified that sound, I became the thing that was rustling the leaves, which was this, you know, jaguar, this jungle cat, which sounds so strange, but this was my experience. And I was inside the experience of this animal. I was the one rustling the leaves. I was walking along this jungle path and it was night and I had the full visceral experience of being this animal, all the sensitivity, all the smells, seeing in the dark, even the kind of beingness, the personality of this animal, you know, this kind of confidence that I was sort of the queen of this place. You know, I was walking through this place. It was mine. It was very confident. I could hear every little sound. And the sensitivity was so complete that I could feel how every hair, you know, on my body was an antenna that I was sensing the world with. And there was this kind of electric connection between the pads of my feet and the damp earth. And it was just this, it was this complete experience that was extraordinary. And at some point, the sound, the vibration, the light and sound vibration came again. And I, gosh, it's been a while. I have to remember the sequence of events, but I found myself next in this, what I call this intelligent blackness, this velvet empty space that was not empty. It was full of intelligence and beingness, and found myself in that space. And then the vibration continued and I began to dissolve. Like whatever consciousness I was in that space, whatever body I had, which was not my physical body, but whatever body I had in that space began to dissolve. And I had the sense that I was made up of something like champagne bubbles, and the bubbles were getting farther and farther apart from each other as I was dissolving. And I became aware of an entity in that space. And she felt female. And she kind of brought my attention to this, what I would consider like the entrance of a portal or a gateway, something like that. And she kind of brought my attention to it. And there was this magnetic draw to move toward that gateway. And the little bubbles of me that had been expanding and dissolving my sense of me, a cohesive me, began to move towards this opening. And some of my little bubbles went through. And as I got closer and closer to it, I understood that it was that on the other side of that is where we go when we die. It's like, if I go through that gateway, that is where we all go when we die. And that thought terrified me. And I, you know, with all my strength and will kind of pulled back into, I mean, I didn't have this conscious thought. I just sort of pulled back. And then I found myself kind of slammed back into my body. And I sat up in just, you know, panic-stricken disbelief, terror of what had just happened. And I, in this quite improbable moment comes next, which is that I, even though I was kind of flushed with adrenaline and this experience, this wild experience happened, I laid down and I put my head on the pillow and I instantly was asleep and in a very vivid dream. I would qualify it as, I don't, but who knows what it exactly was. And I was standing in a familiar place, and out of the horizon rose these four enormous beings made of that same light and sound. And they were joined as one. They were a collective. So there was a mass of light and then four sets of shoulders and foreheads. And these, you know, these four beings rose out of the horizon line. And I looked up at them and they said, "We are here for you when you're ready." And then I woke up. And so, yeah, thank you for inviting me to tell that story. It's been a while and that was nice to remember.
So much of it reminds me of near-death experiences. It sounds like a very spiritual experience.
I agree. I didn't, again, have the context for it, but the more that I have made sense of it, that gateway, you know, I often, for a long time, I felt quite regretful, you know, that I didn't go through that gateway to see what was on the other side, but it truly felt like death. And I do think there's a lot of overlap between whatever that experience was and a near-death experience.
And was there a part of this where it seemed like your whole house was shaking, like there was an earthquake?
That was a different experience. So I had experiences like that before this kind of big experience. And so early on when I started having the paralysis and being taken out of my body and having the figures in the room and all of those things that were happening, I would pull myself out of that experience if I could. And oftentimes I would wake up and the whole house would be shaking. The paintings, I had these paintings behind my bed and they would be smacking the walls because this shaking was happening. And I have no idea what to make of that. But yeah, that happened in earlier experiences.
And did you have a dream experience where you encountered the Greys?
I did. I have not had a lot of direct experience with the Greys, but I did have one very strange experience where I found myself kind of a disembodied awareness. I was just, my perspective and perception was that I was looking kind of over their shoulders. There were two Greys and I was, my awareness was behind them and I was looking between them over their shoulder down to this table, which I again didn't know was a thing, but it was a classic kind of metal flat table with a light, you know, and looking down and seeing my own body and that they were working on something. And, I don't know what to make of this. I've learned since that it doesn't seem that the Greys have a sense of humor, but in this experience, they definitely did. They were doing something on my neck. Like they were working. It seemed like there was like a port or something on my neck that they were fiddling with. And when they noticed me watching, it turned into sort of this comedy where suddenly they both had lab coats on. And one of them said to the other, very much for my benefit, you know, oh, remember on these models, it's righty tighty, lefty loosey. And they said that. And then they opened the port and my consciousness got sucked back into my body. And I woke up and I will say, and I know that was this kind of singular experience, but I will say that right where they were working, years later, I developed cancer there. And I have no idea if that's connected. It's a kind of data point that I take note of. And actually that kind of cancer experience and everything that happened around it was very steeped with contact with other beings and anomalous experience. So that was my gray experience. I have no idea what any of it means, but it was something.
But you hear about such high strangeness. I talked to Mike Clellan the other day for the podcast, and he was talking about an experience where he was on board a craft, and it looked like a 1970s office with a funny carpet and plastic folding tables and things. And it's like, that just doesn't make sense.
That's right. Oh, it's so great you had Mike on. He's a good friend. Exactly. What is this high strangeness? It's part of the mystery of this, and part of why it can't be pinned down into something. It's too strange. It often seems somehow entwined with the person who's having the experience. It seems sometimes very personal to them and in kind of disturbing ways. And sometimes it's just, it's weird with no context. And that is definitely a part of it.
I wonder if in some way they're trying to communicate, and the way their mind works, their intellect, the way they see things is so different from ours. This is their best attempt to communicate with this weirdness.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, as a reason for it, I think there's probably some interaction as well with our own interiority and our own sense making and our individual psyches. You know, in some ways, a lot of these experiences do seem to have like a dream logic that doesn't objectively make sense, but to the person subjectively over time starts to make sense. And that's one of the strangest things about this as well, is that it seems to touch deeply into our subjective interiority. And I think that that's also a reason why it's really difficult to talk to people about this, because it is so much about subjective experience. I can't prove to anyone that these things happened. I can't show them any evidence. And that's, in my mind, not a problem. I think it's actually part of the importance of all of this and the gift of all of it, because it invites us to enter into some sort of strange paradox where we both take the experiences seriously and hold them lightly. You know, was I literally on a craft where they were opening a port in my neck and going righty tighty lefty loosey? Was something happening there? I believe something was happening there. You know, it's very, it all becomes very mysterious and trickster-like. And the way that I've made sense of this is that it requires us to enter into the developmental stage of being a human where we have to hold paradox. It's the either or landscape is not possible to exist in anymore. And so kind of forces us into this space of being okay with the mystery, which is both really hard and also really freeing.
Didn't you have a hypnotic regression, and that in that you went to another planet?
I did. I had a few regressions during my process of coming to terms with all of this. And my first one was, it was a past life regression and a between life regression. And so that was the context for this, for the work that we were doing. We started with a past life and then followed that, you know, through my death, through the death of that person in that lifetime, and then into the between life realm to see what happened there. And I did not at all expect to end up on a different planet. I'm very grateful that the person that was doing the regression and that I was working with wasn't surprised and wasn't shocked and didn't, because it was destabilizing enough. You know, she really held perfect space for me to have this experience. And, so I experienced a past life. I went through the death process, which was very easy. And I think that that's something that we hear from near-death experiences and others, that it's like, it's actually safe to die. And it was a hopeful moment for me to go through that death in the previous life and see how it was okay. And, ended up in what I would say felt like an in-between space. Felt very human. It felt very connected to the earth. Kind of went into a space where I restored something of myself. Like I rested and kind of got nourished after that life on earth. And then connected with this big group of people that I seemed to know, everybody felt very human, and like we were working on projects together, and checked with them to see how the projects were going. And then suddenly I felt this real pull, this real draw towards something. And it seemed to be out in space. And I was encouraged, you know, I said, I feel like this real pull. And the regression therapist said, well, if you want to follow that, you can. And so I did. And I found myself kind of streaming through space, through galaxies and stars, and then arriving. And this is a little, again, sort of data point that I look at, but I kind of arrived into this really dense kind of blue-green space. And the word that came up was Lemuria. And that really freaked me out. I was not ready to deal with that. So I was like, no, I can't. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go to that experience, that life, whatever that was. And so it pretty instantly switched to this other experience, which was being on this planet that was red and orange and yellow. It was like what we would think of maybe as a desert landscape, but it didn't feel like exactly that. It didn't feel like it was here. It also didn't feel desolate like Mars might feel or something. It just was the way that this planet was. And I found myself in a city of sorts and in a courtyard and looking at this sphere that was that was golden, and it was covered with these amoebic shapes, sort of like golden mercury on the sphere. And I was flipping through them, kind of like scrolling on a phone. And I was looking for something that I wanted to work on in my next life. I was like looking for a project. And I came across this project. And I think I can still say most of it from memory. The project was incarnate on Earth, help the planet move from evolution through suffering to evolution through joy and creativity. Learn to turn the wheel, move it from a zero-sum game to a non-zero-sum game. And I was like, that sounds interesting. And so I kind of chose that project. I found myself in a space with four beings. I don't know if they were the same beings who came out of the horizon line. I did feel like maybe this one of them was connected to Ant-Man. I don't know, you know, but I found myself with four beings, and we were looking down at the Earth, and it was kind of suspended in this silver platform. And I looked and I was flooded with memory of how special this place was, how special Earth is, how special the people are, how earnest we all are, how people are, you know, the love and the struggle and the suffering and the joy that exists on this planet and the beauty of it. And the beings around me told me that she's the crown jewel. That's what they called the Earth, the crown jewel. And they said that something happened, and that something was kind of turned off, and that she needed to be turned back on, like the grid needed to be turned back on around her, which would, when she lit up again, it would light up this enormous grid that would affect the whole galaxy. And that was, I think that was, if I remember correctly, that was kind of the end of my experience. There were some more things. The experience started fading. I was very sad about that. I was like, where are they going? What's happening? And they came back and they removed something from me. They removed this kind of film in front of me, this sort of screen in front of me. And they told me that it was my fear of what other people would think of me. And when they removed it, they just said, now you won't worry about what other people think of you. And I have to say that was not an instant transformation, although I do think that something was done there that helped me in that process. And yeah, and then I came out of the regression and I was truly in ontological shock, just absolute shock. And it took me a while to integrate all of that.
So you get a sense of having a mission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A very clear mission that felt completely grandiose for a human being for me to take on. And what does that mean in my regular life? And how can I possibly go about doing this? But a very clear mission, you know, move from help move from evolution through suffering to evolution through joy and creativity. And that is my mission, as it's taken me a long time to kind of own that. and accept it. But that is the core, like that mission statement that I was given is really the core of all the work that I do. You know?
I think if I was given that, I'd think, okay, but how? I need some training. I don't know how to do this.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. I went out and got training. You know, I completely agree with you. I found the experiencer community. After that regression is when I found the experiencer community, and I started to make sense of what, you know, that there weren't answers really, but I found a shared context where other people had these experiences. Other people were kind of given missions. The community that I came into was really, I think, mature and sophisticated in that a lot of the work was just being able to hold the mystery and the paradox and work with consent. Like, do I want this mission? Do I consent to this or not? Like, that was a big part of my journey. I didn't want to do something just because I was told to do it. And I think that has evolved since then into a belief that I have that we're actually teaching ETs consent, and we're teaching this kind of spiritual realm consent. Like, it's really hard to be a human on the planet. You know, it's really hard to be a person on the earth where we have to pay bills and do dishes and also have this kind of sense of mission. And so a lot of the work was around like consenting to this and deciding if I wanted to take this on. And what unfolded concurrently was that it seemed that teachers arrived exactly when I needed them. And so now, you know, I've been in a spiritual lineage now for about 3 years. I've been studying with a teacher who teaches Tibetan Buddhism, which turns out works perfectly with this mission statement. And so it just arrived, like the context and the teaching and the framework that I needed arrived. And I will also say that I don't think me, like, personality Robin, who exists in the world and has to do the dishes and can't figure out how to get enough sleep and has struggles and all the things, is gonna change the evolution of the planet, you know, at all. But I think that choosing to align with that and then showing up as best I can in the spaces that I do to help people on this, to help people cross the threshold into their own truth, has been informed by this mission in enormous ways.
And was there a couple of times you broke your ankle and you kind of found out that they caused that? It was like they were saying, no, you're off the path, and they did something to change it.
Yes. Yeah, so the first time, you know, all of these experiences, and also because of other reasons, I'm a very sensitive person. I'm sure there are, you know, specific traumas and even genetic reasons, but I entered into addiction in my life very early, and a lot of it was to kind of numb the intensity of my experience as a human. You know, it was just really hard for me. It was very, very sensitive to being in this world. And so I, you know, there's a big chunk of my life that we haven't really talked about where I was in, you know, as an alcoholic. I was very messy. I was doing drugs. I was in very unsafe relationships. I was really searching for rescue in any way that I could find it. I was searching for relief from the intensity of both my experiences and just the reality of being a person on the planet. And I was in the midst of the very darkest night of my soul, you know, this really, really dark time in my life. And it was bad and it was getting worse. You know, I was going to hurt myself really badly or someone else. And I didn't feel like I had control. And I desperately wanted it to change, and I couldn't. You know, I was really in it, really in the addiction, mostly alcohol at that time. And I was in a blackout drunk one night, and I stepped outside of my bedroom door and I landed wrong. I landed wrong on my foot and I began to fall. And I do not remember anything from this night other than this moment. As I began to fall, I I became conscious. I came out of the blackout drunk. I became aware. And in the corner of this hallway, this very dark hallway, were these beings, these four beings who I have since called the Four Who Are One. That's the name that I've used for them because they keep showing up in my life. And these four beings, the Four Who Are One, were in the corner and they were flooding me with this sense of care and compassion and concern. And they were watching me fall. And I felt my ankle snap and I crumpled to the floor. And as all that was happening, they said to me, it was this or something worse. And that was that complete experience. The meaning making came later. When I woke up the next day, I had broken my ankle pretty severely and walked around on it all night and badly strained my other ankle. And it was terrible. And that was the last night I had a drink. That was almost, you know, it'll be 9 years in August. And it was really a difficult time. You know, it took a long time to stabilize after being in the depths of alcoholism, and my life was a mess and my relationships were a mess. But that moment, what it felt like to me, and I have really claimed this as the truth of that moment, is that they saved me from some really dark karma. They intervened and saved me from and redirected my path, because otherwise I was going to do something that would have a really, really negative impact on this life and future lives by hurting someone else. And I really believe that they stopped me in my tracks, literally. And so I got sober. It was a really rough ride. Eventually it became amazing, of course, like very, very, very grateful to be free from all of that. And then I broke my ankle again, the same ankle, in very, very different circumstances. It happened right before I got that regression. You know, so while I was getting that regression, I was mostly, my ankle, you know, was mostly healed enough for me to walk on. But it was another moment of stopping me. And it was a time in my life where, like, from the outside, things were going really well. I had a partner and I was working, and I should have been, you know, from the outside, from consensus reality, I kind of should have been happy and thriving. But I was very kind of desperate for a greater meaning in life. And it was that moment that my ankle broke again. And it was really humbling. And I had to surrender to and kind of stop. And then that's when it was another time in my life when my experiences started up again. I started having out-of-body experiences again. I started having contact with the Four Who Are One again. And, you know, soon after, I found the experience to group, and then this current iteration of my journey started.
A lot of what you're describing can sound traumatic and disturbing, but is there stuff that happened that you would say was just wonderful?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, a lot of it was. I mean, it's interesting, in the experiencer community, there is a big like Venn diagram overlap of trauma with experiences. And that's a very, very interesting part of all of this. I have absolutely had amazing, transcendent, incredible experiences. I would say most, if not all of them, probably not all, it's probably not true, but most of them have happened since I have come to terms with that I am a person who has experiences, that there's a context for it, that this is spiritual as well as developmental, and when I kind of started claiming my agency and autonomy and worked through the fear and started doing protection practices and kind of got some framework for it, I started being able to trust these experiences more and say yes to them instead of resist them so much. And I think that that's a journey. You know, I wasn't able to say yes early on because I didn't have the container and the context for that. But over time, I've been able to trust that the beings that I'm working with are here for me, and trust that I have protection practices in place to keep out any beings who are not for me, who want to take advantage in some way, which I've absolutely had those experiences. And so since that context has been created, I've had, I will give you an example. I had an experience pretty quickly after I started implementing protection practices and I was getting support, and I had an experience. I woke up very early. I was meditating in bed, just lying on my back, meditating. And I asked, you know, pretty much the four who are one, you know, do you have any messages for me? I started to feel the out of body sensations, which is this light and sound vibration. And I overtly consented. You know, I was like, I consent to this. This is not my first rodeo. I just asked for help. I feel safe. So I consent to this experience. And that was the experience where I had a sensation of lifting, of rising, which I often have during these out-of-body experiences. But this time, I felt kind of myself rise up. I opened my eyes. I looked down my body, and the blankets were tented over my body. It seemed that I was levitating in my physical body, which had never happened before. I then kind of shot up out of my body really close to the ceiling, so close that I could see like the detail of the paint line, you know, that was perfect from a distance, but not that close. I shot through the ceiling, through the roof, up into the cosmos and up into space. And I stopped. I had a sense of beings with me, like the four who are one seemed to be kind of above me. And they handed me this line of light and sound. I don't know how else to describe it. It was this sort of contained line of light and sound. And I took it. And the next thing I know, I was in my bed. My body was not how I had left it. When this experience started, I was laying with my back, my hands were kind of crossed over my chest. When I kind of came to in my bed, I was sideways and slumped over, and some of the covers were over my head, which seemed really weird. Like it was a very strange experience. I sat up, which was very hard to do. I was blinking my eyes. I reached over to turn. It was very early dawn light, you know, so very, very dim light was coming in. I reached over to turn on these sort of fairy lights I had set up around my bed, and I clicked it and nothing happened. The lights didn't work. And I thought, oh, that's really weird. I must have a power outage. I picked up my phone to turn on the flashlight. My phone didn't work. And then I looked in front of me. I actually looked to my left and realized that I was in this, that there was this, what I called the honeycomb matrix. There were all these hexagonal cells that looked like a honeycomb. And that where I looked, they would appear, and then I would look somewhere else and they would disappear from where I had looked and reappear where I was looking. And I was taking that in and then looked in front of me, and these four beings walked through my bedroom wall. And they said, we're showing you, quote, like air quotes, we're showing you behind the scenes of reality. This is what your reality hangs on. It responds based on where you place your attention and the quality of your attention. Learn to use the operating system of reality. And, you know, I will say that was an amazing, powerful experience. It also, you know, I had ontological shock when I came out of it. I had to go to work. I had to be a person in the world. But it was an enormous teaching and an amazing experience that I continue to work with to this day.
We've been talking about a book. It's called Earth, A Love Story. Can you tell us where people can get it?
Yeah, robinlassiter.com, earthalovestory.com to contact me directly. It's on Amazon as well. If you want to listen to it for free on my podcast, which is also called Earth a Love Story, it's the first 15 episodes, and it's available that way as well.
And can people book hypnosis with you?
Yeah, so I do past life regression. I have training in transpersonal hypnotherapy in addition to training for past life regression. And then I also see clients in a coaching setting, one-on-one, people who are having experiences and finding it difficult to integrate into their life, which is my story. And I was helped by people across that threshold. And that's what I do now. I help people across that threshold. And then I also have groups that where we do kind of deep study on different lenses and avenues of all of it.
Well, great. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was just a true pleasure. You're a great interviewer. I'm very happy to be on the podcast. Thank you.
Thanks. And that was an interview with Robin Lassiter about her book, Earth, a Love Story. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFOpodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can get a 7-day free trial. And please check out my new book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences. It's on Amazon, and you can get it on Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.